Lake Effect brings you conversations about what's happening in Milwaukee and the people, places, and organizations that shape our community. This is Lake Effect Spotlight from WUWM, Milwaukee's NPR.
Late last month, Milwaukee's Mayor Cavalier Johnson submitted his proposed city budget for next year. The $200 million budget addresses everything from funding our parks, libraries, and police. So what happens now? And what should we know about what's in the mayor's proposed budget? To find out more, Lake Effect's Jimmy Gutierrez spoke with the president and co-founder of Urban Milwaukee, Jeremy Janine, who's been covering city government for the past decade.
Jeremy, thank you so much for coming in to the studio and talking to us about the mayor's budget, which the proposed budget, which was released, I don't know, at this point, like a week and a half ago or so. Where exactly are we in the budget process? Where did that proposed budget go? And then where will it eventually end up?
So by a series of statutes and the city charter and a bunch of other factors, the city introduces its budget, the mayor introduces the budget in late September every year. Then the Common Council spends all of October reviewing it. And that review includes a public hearing with feedback on it from the community. It includes departments presenting it. And then in early November, it'll actually be when you wake up the day after the election, it'll be Council Budget Adoption Day.
How much movement happens between the proposed budget and then everything that happens in the council? Like, how much of this budget that we'll talk about do you expect to get changed or kind of tinkered with?
So it's about a $2 billion budget. The amendments will be around like $300,000 a year, $400,000 a year. But they add up to have a huge impact because things like Sunday library hours, that was an amendment to this year's budget. And that was a big debate. It wasn't a ton of money on a $2 billion budget, but it has a big impact on people's lives.
$2 billion, as you were talking about, the amendments will come. What about the mayor's budget as is, though, sit out to you?
We're in the second year now of the sales tax. And the interesting thing to me, one key important thing, is a Milwaukee resident, I'm happy to see this. And I think everyone in Milwaukee and everyone statewide should be happy to see the sales tax. The city is collecting even more than they thought they would. And that's a really healthy thing for the budget, because that means, one, they estimated correctly, or they actually underestimated. But two, that means the money that was projected to come into fund city services is there and can continue to fund those services. Going back before Act 12 that enabled the sales tax, the situation for the city budget was really dire. The city just did not have enough revenue and costs were going up.
Mm-hmm. What are the other effects of Act 12? You kind of brought that up. It was the sales tax that was implemented. There was also some pretty strict language in there about police staffing and dealing with the city's pensions as well. How's that looking?
Act 12 was a grand compromise between local governments, often led by people with Democratic Party affiliations, and the state legislature, which is currently led by the Republican Party in both the Senate and the Assembly. And so this compromise wasn't just, we're going to give you City of Milwaukee and Milwaukee County, we're not just going to give you a new sales tax and say, spend it as you see fit. There was a lot of restrictions that came with it. And two of the key restrictions are police and fire staffing have targeted levels that the city must reach in a decade. And if sales tax collections continue to go up, more and more money must go to hiring more police and firefighters. So we're seeing that in the 2025 proposed budget. For the fire department, they use this average daily sworn strength level, and that's going to go up by 7. So there'll be a new firehouse, a new old firehouse, the reopening of a firehouse that was previously closed because of budget cuts.
One thing that's been written about too is the borrowing for a lot of these larger capital projects. Where exactly are they borrowing from and how much are they borrowing?
They're borrowing from you, me, and people that have retirement funds invested in bonds everywhere. So they just go sell the debt on the public market. And they don't borrow as much to plug budget holes. The city's been pretty good about that. But the capital needs, so the city rebuilds a bridge. They don't pay the full cost of that bridge on year one. They say, okay, here's a 10-year debt instrument or a 30-year debt instrument. And the challenge has been that you have to pay that interest every single year. Anyone with a mortgage or student loans is familiar with this, that every month they want that money. Same thing for the city. And every time the city borrows more money because the cost of all these things is going up, that cost, that monthly cost is going up. And this year we're seeing more borrowing, which means in the future it's going to be more and more difficult to pay. It means just more budget pressure every year, more budget pressure if you're borrowing more. The challenge then really becomes, well, how do you stop borrowing? People want their streets to be fixed. Well, you borrow to rebuild streets. So that becomes a real challenge for the city to navigate.
Mm. Can I throw a couple like quick fire community talking points that I saw just pop up around the mayor's proposed budget to you?
Yeah, and we should talk about property tax and assessments and stuff at some point.
Which is exactly this. So one of the big ones I saw was that there was an increase, again, to property taxes. I believe it was around 2%.
Correct.
Just people commenting left, right, and center about when does it stop? Is this what I should expect every year? Property taxes going up? Take it away with their Facebook questions on that one.
All right. Property taxes in Wisconsin are complicated when it comes to how it affects your city budget and your individual property tax rate. The amount of money the city can collect in total is about $300 million, and that's capped by state law. So this year, and you can increase it by a couple small factors, like if a new building is built, the assessed value of that building can be used to raise the amount of money city collects. So if you're growing, the amount of money you can collect, growing physically as a city, the amount of money you can collect goes up. The challenge for a city like Milwaukee is it's not physically growing. There's not farm fields being turned into houses in Milwaukee. So it has to deal with constraints. Well, this year, the net of all this new construction is about 2%. Does that mean your individual property taxes will go up by 2%? Not necessarily. And this is where it gets complicated. Is it's best described as splitting up a dinner check. And that's Alderman Scott Spiker's analogy. How that $300 million gets collected is based on your assessment of your property. Mm-hmm. So if your house goes up by, let's say, 10% in its assessed value, but the average house in Milwaukee goes up by 12%, your property tax rate or property tax bill is actually likely to go down. Now you're like, okay, but that didn't happen for me. And that's because the city of Milwaukee is only one of three or four entities that collect property taxes. There was a Milwaukee Public Schools referendum,
right,
entirely separate from city government, included raising the amount of money MPS can collect substantially. And that's where everyone paid an increase then because the amount of money they could collect went up.
Just to run this by you then, if I have property assessment jumped up 10%, the city's overall assessment for residential housing 12%, I may actually see a decrease in my property tax.
Yes. And that I can say that is a truthful thing because it actually happened to me. My house went up fairly substantially.
Congratulations.
Well, went up fairly substantially in value, but the net of everything that happened that year, and this was 2021, I believe, was my actual property tax bill went down by like $35.
Thank you for that. This is not turning into a quick hits part of the interview, but that's fine. The other question that I had and that I had seen kind of float around in a bunch of places where people asked, how does this city compare to other cities with similar populations? And they pointed to some cities like Charlotte or Nashville, which have a billion or sometimes double the budget that Milwaukee does. If we could fund our transit system or our park system or our library systems more robustly, what do you say to folks that ask that question about how do we compare to other cities, similar size cities?
It is it's very difficult to compare Milwaukee to another city because the state of Wisconsin, as we talked about, that cap on property taxes, there's just a lot of different factors. There's also the definition of what is the city of Milwaukee, Milwaukee County. The city of Chicago includes a transit system in its budget. It includes parks in its budget. It includes schools in its budget. So I don't even know how big their budget is, but it's enormous. In Milwaukee, the city of Milwaukee includes none of those entities in its budget. Parks and transit are part of the county.
MPS is almost the same size as the city's budget.
Yep, it's an entirely separate thing. So it gets very complicated to make true comparisons. But the other key factor, and this has been more divergent up until recently with Act 12, is the city of Milwaukee really had no other revenue source other than property taxes and fees. Now it has a sales tax. But if you look at a place like St. Louis, they have an income tax, I believe. They can change the geographic footprint of their government, meaning they can annex land. The city of Milwaukee has been the same 97-some square miles for several years, so that it's more of a static thing than a city like a Nashville or a Charlotte that's geographically growing.
I also wanted to ask you about the Policy Forum, which just released its analysis of the mayor's budget, which you've written about. What did you learn there?
There was one key word I took away from that report, and that's precarious. The report identified that Act 12 has had a positive impact on the city's budget, that there are not major cuts this year, but that the way the city is avoiding the major cuts this year is withdrawal from these reserve funds. And the way the reserve funds are set up, they get refilled at a certain amount every year. But the amount the city is withdrawing is probably not sustainable in future years. So the city entered this year with an $87 million structural deficit, meaning that if the city wanted to do everything in 2025 like it did in 2024, it basically was short $87 million. the proposed budget from the mayor does about $10 million in cuts. It recognizes some extra sales tax revenue, but half of that gap closing, about $40 million, is pulling from reserves. The city might only be able to pull in future years at about a $20 million level. I'm just hypothetically throwing out a number, which means it's going to have to do $20 million more in cuts or $20 million more in fee increases, which would be an astronomical amount of fee increases.
It's hard to look into a crystal ball and predict what could happen, but what do you expect over the next 2 to 5 to 10 years with this city's budget? Like, what should folks get ready for?
I've been closely watching the city of Milwaukee budget for about 10 years now. I've been covering it since at least 2018, every year writing several, if not a dozen articles about just the budget process. The one thing I'd say is I still think there are cuts on the horizon. Act 12 did not solve all the city problems, and there are difficult decisions to be made. But without Act 12, the cuts would be so astronomical, the city would not resemble itself. There'd be mass layoffs of police and fire and other general city workers. So there's a solvable problem ahead, and that challenge is going to rear its head 2026, 2027, and it could come earlier if the economy tanks. It could be postponed if the economy doesn't. But there will eventually be a day where the city needs to make really hard decisions about around the edges about what services to cut or totally re-envision how they're provided.
I wanted to talk with someone else about the budget. Renetta Palmer is a member of the African American Roundtable, and they've been showing up to public budget hearings to call for participatory budgeting. And if you're asking yourself, what exactly is that? Well, I asked Renetta.
Participatory budgeting, it puts the power back in the voice of the people. It lets our voices, needs, requests be heard. It gives the elected officials an opportunity to hear us and see our demands. We could build working relationships on that. They probably can't, you know, give us everything that we're asking for, but let's start with something. Let's start with that, invested in a little bit of schools, housing, parks, having food security places, things like that. So I think it's the voice of the people saying where our tax dollars are going and how we want our city to invest back into us.
She said there's an even simpler way of thinking about this.
I think we all have budgets that we live our life in. Like, I make a certain amount of income, so I have to budget and prioritize where funds go. And the way I see it is, like, I put the most money with the most important things that I can't live without. And the money that I don't put as much into is, like, you know, things that I really don't care about or things that I feel like can wait. And I think the repetition of just always seeing that the police, the fire and the public safety gets the bulk of it. When you say, like, crime rates are going high, your things are still getting bad in the city, why keep putting money in the same pot when it's not doing anything? Let's be innovative. Let's look at other things that's happening. I'm not saying we're ready for a society in the world where, like, where we don't need the police, but I believe if we benefit and give the people a life worth living, where it's adequate housing, food, shelter, schools, there wouldn't be so much of a quote-unquote need for police.
That was Jeremy Janine, Urban Milwaukee president and co-founder. He spoke with Lake Effect's Jimmy Gutierrez.
You can find more interviews like this one by visiting wuwm.com/lakeeffect. And while you're there, subscribe to the Lake Effect Spotlight podcast.